Korach didn't think anything. What did he think? So Chazal and the Mefarshim give a wide array of different answers to try to fill in the gaps as to what Vayikach Korach, what the object of Vayikach Korach really is. And I think if you put together a lot of those different answers, Chazal paint a whole picture of what the whole situation of Korach's whole rebellion. And I think you can pinpoint three different things from all of the different answers that Chazal and the Mefarshim give. Number one, you get Korach's motivation. Why did he do what he did? What drove him? Number two, you get his objective, his goal. Why did he do what he did? For what purpose? And number three, which is what I want to focus on most together tonight, is how. How did he accomplish what he did? What was his mechanism? What was his strategy? What was his means? So let's go through a couple of the midrashim to try to show exactly what I mean. The Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah says as follows: Lokach klul lokach ela libo nital. Korach didn't take. It's a little play on words. Instead of vayikach, kind of think of it as vayukach. Korach was taken. Libo nital. Korach's heart took him. His desire took him. His drive took him. He was taken by an inner desire for something else. And of course, we know the Mishnah Avos. Ezohi machlokashi l'shem shamayim, zo machlokas hela v'shamayim. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, zo machlokas Korach v'cholad asa. Korach was driven by selfish motives. He was driven by his desire for power, by his kavod. Rosham Shnafal Hirsch points out that the meaning of vayikach, of lekicha, in this type of context, is an improper act that's driven by selfish motives. That's vayikach Korach. He was driven by something from within. He had a desire for that power and kavod, and that's what led him to do what he did. That's what led him to stir up this rebellion. So that's the motivation. What about the purpose? So we know from Rashi, vayikach Korach lokach es atzma, based on Unklus voice, palig, Korach separated himself from the klal. He was poresh min hatzibur. Korach created a whole segment, a whole group of people that was going to rebel against Moshe and Aaron, and he did so obviously so that he could be the leader, so that he could be the one who would have the kavod, so that he could be the one who would have the spotlight. That's his objective. What about how? What about his means, the mechanism? So here, if you look at Rashi's second interpretation, so Rashi points out that vayikach means that he was moshkam bidvar. Korach took his Eda, his people, his group, with words. The Chazal note that Korach was a pikeach. He was cunning. Someone who was charismatic. Someone whose words carried a lot of weight. He had a certain proclivity, a certain talent with language that allowed him to convince and to sway those around him. Moshkam midvarma. And we know that really he dressed his intentions, his real intentions for kavod and for power, with what looked like claims that were noble on the outside, but on the inside were really just vacuous. With bias, shenes mala besvarim, with a talis that's kulo techeles, what Rav Soloveitchik dubbed the common sense rebellion. Something that seems good on the outside, but in truth, at its core, we know, really holds no bar. So if that's the case, then it's really lo lokach klum. Korach didn't take anything. And that's exactly the point. Vayikach Korach doesn't have an object, because Korach didn't take anything. There was no substance to his argument. There was no material. There was no content to what he tried to do. There was only a slippery tongue. There was only something that convinced, that cajoled, that persuaded those around him. There was only the charisma, the flashiness, the showiness of what he was to create that Eda. But in truth, there was nothing. Lo lokach klum, vayikach really has no object. It seems to me that Korach's, that this method of a charisma, of certain persuasion that's rooted in a showiness and flashiness, but that really doesn't have any content beneath it, I think it's a challenge that we really face with Zman Hazeh. Certainly in general society, you know, we're surrounded by tweets, by sound bites, slogans. And the truth is that these things they're intended to capture our attention, to persuade us into believing something. But really, they're vacuous. They don't have much meaning when you think about them. You just take them in because we're attracted to them. It's their charisma, it's the catchiness that draws us in. And as in general, when something happens in general society, in the society around us, we always have to be aware of those problems or those cautions creeping into our Torah society, even to our community. And even if that's in a different way, a different form, or to a different degree. So let's consider as follows. Think about Korach and Adasa. It's really a twofold problem. On the one hand, there's the Edom. There's the 250 members who are coaxed into believing the nothingness that Korach takes them with. And I think that we need to, as if we're thinking of ourselves as listeners, as people who are taking in content, we have to be very aware, very cognizant of the content that we're taking in. You know, are we drawn just to something that's charismatic? Are we drawn just to something that's flashy, that's catchy? There's a phenomenon in recent years that whenever someone gives a shiur, it has to have a catchy name. Why is that? Are we drawn to listen to a shiur just because of its title? Just because it's something that catches our eye? When we're in shul sitting at a Shabbos morning drasha, and we get back to the Shabbos table and someone asks us how it was, so is our report based solely on whether we're wowed, whether we're amazed, whether we sat there feeling like we were at a theater? Or no, it's based on the content. It's based on the substance. It's based on the material. I think that this challenge might even creep into the base marriage itself, into our learning. So much of the current of what drives us to get into learning in the first place, be it towards the later years of elementary school and high school, certainly, is the excitement of learning, the geschmack. But as I've always heard my friend, Rabbi Schreier, you know, mention, learning is not always geschmack. There's sometimes a drier sugya. It's not always a lamdish sugya. Of course, we should always be trying to analyze to the greatest degree. And no, please don't misquote me there. But it's not always going to lead you to the conclusions or to give you that excitement that you want. There's sometimes going to be a drier sugya. And the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to learn every sugya, regardless of whether we get a geschmack out of it or not. It's not about the charisma, it's about the substance, it's about the content. But on the other hand, there's not only the Eidah, there's Korach. And that's really what I want to focus on. Korach is the charismatic influencer. He's the person who speaks. He's the one who delivers the content. He's the one who takes advantage of his persuasion tactics. Many of us might find ourselves this summer in situations in which we are tasked with being mashpia on those around us. Maybe various summer programs, we might be a madrich, we might be a mechanich, might be a division head. Even we in the workplace, even if we're not on a summer program, we might be tasked with giving advice to those around us. Or just on displaying a certain mode of being, a certain reputation. And the question for us is that when we are charged with supporting and positively being mashpia upon those around us, do we follow Korach's example? Are we taken by the values or the so-called values of charisma? of a flashiness and a showiness that draws a crowd in? Or do we focus on conveying a meaningful substance, something of content, an ideal that uplifts those around us? And if we do a true cheshbon ha-nefesh and we realize that, you know what, maybe somewhere within us we are driven to be that charismatic person, so we have to ask another question. What does that reflect about our motivation to begin with? Are we in this lishma? Are we in Madrid and a machanich because we want to uplift the kids around us? Because we want to display what true genuine Avodas Hashem is about? Are we in this for our own ego? For the self-aggrandizement? For knowing that those around us are going to look at us in a more positive light? What are we there for at the beginning? Well, the truth is, the charisma is not only something that we have to think about in terms of our motivations, but it's also something we have to think about in terms of what we're accomplishing, because it could really be counterproductive. You know, if we overemphasize and exaggerate the geschmack, the importance of the excitement, so we run a certain risk. We take the risk that our audience is going to get the wrong message, that they're going to think that the learning and Avodas Hashem is important only as much as it brings them that excitement. You know, from Parshas Ki Sisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to ascend the har, v'ish lo ya'aleh imach, he should be totally alone. No one should go up to the har with him. Rashi there comments, Ein lecha mita yafa min atznius. There's nothing better than privacy, than humility. The first luchos, the first set of luchos, we're giving bekolos ubibrachim with a whole show, a whole theatric surrounding and environment, but they were broken. They didn't last. They're ephemeral. The second luchos, v'ish lo ya'aleh imach, ein lecha mida yafa min atznius, those are the luchos that lasted. Those are the luchos that had a permanent impact. If we're trying to have a permanent impact on those around us, what's going to be our mahalach? Are we going to take the mahalach of the shattered luchos? Or are we going to take the mahalach of the ein lecha mida yafa min atznius of the second luchos? Now, I'm aware that, you know, charisma does have a certain place. Of course, we can't deliver content and substance without packaging. It's important that our audience understand what we're saying and that they gravitate towards it. And I think the Chazal themselves saw this. Something very interesting. He said before, he quoted Rashi, Vayikach Korach, that it was Mashon Midbarim. He used his words in order to persuade those around him. If you look at Rashi al-Torah and two other places, we find that Chazal and Rashi associate with the word kach kicha, a kicha bitvarim, but in a positive light, not a negative one. Parshas Tzav, in the context of the Miluim, Moshe Rabbeinu is called kach es aharon, and Rashi there says, kochenu bitvarim moshchei, take him with your words. Parshas Balosa, a few weeks ago, the Levim for Avodas HaMishkan, Kach es HaLevim, Mitoch B'nai Yisrael, Rashi says, Kachim B'dvarim, take them with your words. And what words? Ashreichem Shetizku Li Yosham Moshim Lamar. So it's interesting. On the one hand, we have Korach, who does a Kicha B'dvarim, and on the other hand, we have Moshe Rabbeinu two times, doing a Kicha B'dvarim. The former being a negative one, the latter being a positive one. What's the difference? They're both Kicha B'dvarim. Is Kicha B'dvarim always bad? Is it always good? Obviously, the answer is neither. It depends on the way it's done. I would argue that what Chazal have in mind here is two different types of Kicha B'dvarim. There's a Kicha B'dvarim that's a packaging. That's meant to enhance, to convey the material, the substance that you're trying to disseminate, that you're trying to get across. Chazal give us eitzos all the time about how to speak to those around us. It is important to communicate in an effective way. in a way that will hopefully spur those around us to listening to what we have to say and to considering and thinking about the ideas that we're sharing. That's the Kachim Bidvarim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Ashreichem Shetizku Lio Shamashim Lamakom. He had the substance, he had the material. His words spoke for themselves. And the Kachim Bidvarim was just the packaging around it. The Meshicha was just the way that Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Levian in. Korach, on the other hand, was the opposite. A different type of Kachim Bidvarim, a different type of Kicha. Not a Kicha of a packaging, but a Kicha Bidvarim, that's the end goal. That's it. That's all it's about. Just to take someone else. Just to exert your control over your audience. To dupe them. To persuade them into buying into anything that you have to say, regardless of whether it's meaningful or not. That's the Kicha Bidvarim of Korach. What we have to focus on is making sure that we follow the Kicha Bidvarim of Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think that it's incumbent upon us to try to consider some of the telltale signs of whether our focus is on content and substance and meaning, or it's just on the charisma and the reputation that we're trying to build and the popularity that we're trying to gain. The first one is to consider the forum in which we speak, the forum in which we convey material. Are we always attracted to the public sphere? Do we always want to take the spotlight? Do we always want to be the one on stage? Or are we just as comfortable with a one-on-one conversation, with delivering content in private? The difference between Korach's call for change, and Benos Tzlacha, and the Tmein Nefesh, and the Hayu B'Derech HaChokah of Pesach Sheni, all three of them call for change. What's the difference between them? Korach is done in public. Vayakumu l'shmei Moshe. Benos Tzlacha, the Tmein, and the Hayu B'Derech HaChokah of Pesach Sheni, Chazal tell us was in the Beis HaMedrash, in a private setting, in a respectful setting, approaching Moshe Rabbeinu to ask him to consider change. Second thing to consider is to what lengths are we willing to go to be Mashiach? You know, are we interested only in the popular campers, only in the ones who are successful, or only in the ones who are good at basketball? Or are we interested also in the ones who might fall through the cracks? Now, every year on a certain summer program, we always had a staff meeting, and inevitably, what would be raised at the staff meeting was that, you know, this segment of campers are being taken care of, this segment is being taken care of, but there's ones in the middle, no, they're falling through the cracks. And we would go through the meeting trying to think about all the different strategies that we can make sure, that we could think of to try to make sure that those campers would be taken care of. But I think that the fundamental point was lost. What does it reflect about our hashkaah if there's a whole group of people that are falling through the cracks? That we're attracted towards being Mashiach, only this, you know, type of person or only that type of person? What does that reflect about our hashkaah? A genuine hashkaah doesn't discriminate because it's interested in uplifting the Avodas Hashem of every single person around us. Only the hashkaah of Korach, the one that's interesting in advancing our own ego, our own reputation, is the one that discriminates. See, we're running out of time. Take two more minutes. Sorry for running out of time. The Slonimer has an amazing line. He says, Korach, what was Korach's problem? Is that he didn't believe in the relationship between a Mashiach and a Mekabel. That's why he said, Madu atisnasu al kal Hashem. Moshe, why are you ascending above the people? Why do you think you're the leader? Madu atisnasu. We don't need a Mashiach, we don't need a leader. And that's so interesting. Because all that we've said tonight is that Korach Dafka used the form of Hashva'ah in order to achieve his objectives. So he's the one who doesn't believe in the relationship between a Mashpia and a Mekabel, that there needs to be a Mashpia. He's Dafka, the one who uses persuasion, who uses Hashva'ah in order to achieve his goal. I think the idea is that maybe the reason why Korach rejected Hashbah was because he cheapened what Hashbah is all about. If you think that Hashbah is just about charisma, just about flashiness and showiness, then of course there's no place for that. Yeah, so then reject it and take advantage of it in a cruel way. But if Hashbah really has meaning, if it's the relationship between a Mashiach and a Makabel, a Rebbe and a Talmud, a mentor and a mentee, then that Hashbah, obviously, is the one that we're supposed to have as part of the Shal Shabbos HaMasorah. So the task that lies before us, Gavram, is in all situations of Hashbah, whether it be this summer in the workplace or in a camp, or throughout the rest of the year, conversations between friends in group settings, to follow not the Kicha B'Dvarim of Korach, but the Kicha B'Dvarim of Moshe Rabbeinu, to persuade with content, not with fanfare. Bez Hashem, Hashem should give us the koach to teach and to model genuine avodas Hashem, following the path of Moshe Rabbeinu, that the words of Ashreichem Shetizku, Leo Shamashim Lamamo, do our top.
You're shaming down. Go ahead.